Hello and welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, known today as the Stockbridge-Munsee community. I'm Sina Bazila Hickey.
And I'm Rick Rigney. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, first, Mark Dunley reports on the proposed expansion of the Iroquois pipeline. Then, Willie Terry reports from the New York State Nurses Rally for fair conditions and contracts at Ellis Hospital. Later on, Blaze Bryant brings us trivia on developmental disabilities and Women's History Month with James King. After that, Bree Barthel shares autobiographical book recommendations from the Troy Library. Finally, K.P. Hollier reports on the upcoming Threads exhibition celebrating regional AAPI artists organized by the AAPI Heritage Month 518 and Albany Center Gallery. But first, here are the headlines.
Welcome to the show, Rick Rigney.
Thank you.
The town of New Lebanon in Columbia County will receive $2 million in state funding to cap the county-owned landfill in town, which has contaminated the nearby area, including the local school. The funding appeared to partially be an effort to bolster the re-election chances of Assemblymember Dede Barrett, who faces a primary challenge from progressives.
President Biden has granted clemency to Stacey Wilder, an Albany resident woman who spent more than 4 years in federal prison for a nonviolent drug conviction. She was released from prison in 2007.
The Albany Dutchmen, a college-based summer baseball team, will not play in 2024 after failing to reach an agreement to continue to play in a town-owned facility in Gilderland. The team has existed for 15 years, but the town says that the Dutchmen were displacing local youth teams.
The Gazette reports that Schenectady residents are concerned that they will have a more difficult time borrowing books from the regional library system after the Schenectady Library decided to opt out of the Southern Adirondack Library system in order to bring their IT systems in-house. The library claims nothing will change until they reach an agreement with the Capital Region's Upper Hudson Library System.
A group of Niskayuna residents are starting a new group to advocate for changes to the town's new water and sewer rates after the new rates resulted in unexpectedly high utility bills for some residents this month.
The Capital District Transportation Authority is planning to build two more mobility hubs, with one in Troy and one in Albany, around the Capital Region. Mobility hubs integrate different modes of transportation and create a single location that gives customers choices with improved connections between bus routes, comfortable walking areas, and safe pedestrian access. The mobility hub planned for Troy will be placed in Liberty Square in the Little Italian neighborhood, Little Italy neighborhood, at the corner of 4th and Liberty Street.
Rensselaer and Rockland counties have each sued New York in an effort to throw out the state law moving local elections to even years. Onondaga County filed suit earlier this year. Rensselaer County contends the state law is unconstitutional and infringes on the county's home rule and its county charter. And that's it for the headlines. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, listener-supported radio that builds community in Troy and the surrounding Capital Region through broad grassroots participation.
Our content is produced by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org. Email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org or call 518-272-2390.
The Iroquois Pipeline runs from the Canadian border to Long Island and New York City. They are seeking a permit from DEC to double the size of compressor stations that have long polluted disadvantaged working-class communities in Dover and Athens, New York. Mark Dunley reports.
We're talking about the ongoing campaign to stop the expansion of the Iroquois Pipeline, and we're joined by Mary Finneran, who's co-chair of the Gas Action Team of Sierra Club, and Kim Frazek, who is the director of Sane Energy. We've certainly covered the pipeline issue previously, but Mary, why don't you give us a quick introduction to the issue and then what you're doing on the issue.
Okay, so basically the Iroquois expansion enhancement, they say, we say expansion by compression project, is one that has been being pushed for about 4 years now. The Iroquois pipeline was originally planned in the late 80s and completed in the early 90s in 95. The EPA fined them for poor construction under the Clean Water Act, but in their description, they mentioned how poorly the whole pipeline was laid on rocks versus gravel or sand. So that's something to keep in mind when we say that from Athens south to the New York City, Long Island markets, the pipeline is going to be receiving a lot more gas. Through expansion of the compressor stations. The compressor stations will be pushing a lot more gas through this pipeline. And it's dangerous. It's not only dangerous, but the toxicities will increase, the climate impacts will increase exorbitantly, and it's against the CLCPA. That's it in a nutshell. We're looking for comments to stop this project.
And Kim, did you have something to add?
The need for the pipeline. So, National Grid, who is the downstate utility that would be receiving this gas, they, along with Con Edison, who share a network downstate, they're basically pushing for more gas because they make money by building more infrastructure and then charging us for their return on equity. So that's how all of our utility bills in New York State go up, is that utilities, they don't make money by delivering us gas or electricity. They make money by building infrastructure and charging us for it. They are regulated by the Public Service Commission, but the Public Service Commission in 2019, we made such a stink about the North Brooklyn pipeline in the National Grid rate case that they had an independent assessor look at, if certain infrastructure was needed, and the independent assessor found that it indeed was not needed, and that National Grid is sort of flubbing its design day for need for gas. And so, we also know that when we were fighting the Williams pipeline, the big pipeline that was slated to go through the New York Harbor, we beat that pipeline, we put that to bed, but National Grid was creating such a stink at that point. Oh, we need the gas, we need the gas. And so much so that they were calling their to asking their customers to lobby for them, to push for the Williams pipeline, because that would justify them building more infrastructure and charging us more money on our bills. So we also, when they decided, oh, we're gonna stop serving gas because we're out of gas, we found out that that was illegal for them to do. And at the time, our governor was Governor Cuomo, and that made Governor Cuomo pretty upset. So he threatened to revoke the National Grid license to do business in New York State, and saying, you need to come up with a plan. If you're going to run out of gas so quickly, you need to come up with a plan. And one of those plans, so they had four things that they came up with. One of them was the Iroquois pipeline. Another was big LNG barges. Another one was LNG trucking. And then there was a fourth one that was a no infrastructure option using energy efficiency and heat pumps. So, everybody that's fighting the, or asking for the Iroquois pipeline conveniently forgets about that no infrastructure option that we, really had pushed for. So there are alternatives out there that do not need a 40-year-old pipeline getting expanded to push double the amount of gas through it and endangering people along the entire route of the pipeline. So, we know that it's not needed. And I feel like all the state agencies under Governor Hochul right now, they are in favor of gas. They get money from you know, gas lobbyists and the gas industry. So it's like they're telling everybody, oh yeah, the gas is needed, but there's no, like, indeed there are two studies that show that the gas is actually not needed.
So we have been talking about DEC. I understand this gas pipeline goes through four states. So what, you know, why does DEC, you know, have a role rather than, say, the National Federal Energy Regulatory Commission? And what's the timeline for the decision and submitting comments?
Okay, can I address that? The timeline, the comments are due on Monday, April 29th. And the DEC is involved because FERC, and it's only a two-state project, it's only going through New York State. It does, the Iroquois starts up in Waddington, across from Lake Ontario, but it only goes through New York State and Connecticut. Connecticut only gets the disadvantages, gets none of the quote advantages. So the DEC is allowed, the FERC always allows the DEC to have their air permits put through, which it is an ASF, a state air permit, which I believe should be actually a Title V because this project is getting so huge. The Athens compressor station is moving from 10,000 horsepower to 22,000 horsepower. The Dover is moving from 18,000 horsepower to 30,000 horsepower. Both should be Title V's. But also the cumulative impacts, the infrastructure that's near both of these compressor stations is phenomenal. There's train tracks that pass very, very close to both of these compressor stations. There's also an asphalt plant and a lumber burning plant and a Central Hudson supply line in Athens, along with Athens Gen. And there's several projects that are in the works in Dover. And they also have the Cricket Valley power plant. So the cumulative impacts are huge. Athens is in the middle of a DAC community, and and Dover is adjacent to a DAC community and only a quarter mile from a huge school campus. So regarding FERC, FERC allows DEC to have their say regarding air permits. And we believe the air permits should be denied. We are hoping people make comments as they see fit. And I think Kim can give them good information as to how to do that.
We have about a little over a minute left.
Yeah, if you go to our short link bit.ly/StopTheIroquoisPipeline, you'll find directly how to comment.
And that will have some background information. And
yes,
you mentioned that the Hochul administration has been a supporter of gas. We have any sense where Hochul is standing on this particular proposal?
You know, we don't, but it's really up to us to push the DEC, you know, to prove, A, we don't need it. And the DEC shouldn't even be looking at need. They should just be looking at the fact that it's going to be completely polluting our air and endangering New Yorkers, Connecticut residents as well. You know, we don't need the gas downstate. You know, downstate, I live here. You know, we don't want to frack up our neighbors upstate in order to have a commodity that a big corporation wants to sell downstate. So really hope that people submit comments.
And to clarify, DACs are disadvantaged communities and environmental justice communities for those.
Talking with Mary Finneran, who's co-chair of the Gas Action Team, the Sierra Club, and Kim Frazek from Sage Energy. This is Mark Dunley with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Again, the deadline for DEC comments on the Iroquois pipeline is April 29th.
The New York State Nurses Association picketed on April 16th, calling for safe staffing and fair contracts at Ellis Hospital in Schenectady. Roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry attended and shares this report.
AFL-CIO, we have your respect. And we will continue to come to these rallies, and we will build the momentum as we have over the years. We'll bring our friendly rat, and we will make sure that respect gets to the CEOs and you get a contract. Let's win this, as Mark said.
Next, I have coming up, I'm so appreciative for the different people who are standing behind me today. I have to tell you, I'm overwhelmed. I am from the nurses from Main Campus, from Bellevue, who have showed up today. We are standing together. I am also appreciative for the nurses that came from Albany Med and Nathan Tower and all of these other places. Next, I have coming up, Rashida Taylor, clergy, New York State Council of Churches.
Thank you. My name is Rashida Tyler. I am the Deputy Executive Director of the New York City Council of Churches. And I'm here to say we represent over 7,500 congregations in New York State, from Massa People to Messina, and we all stand with nurses.
Terry, you're Roman Labor Card flying for the Hustle Mohawk Magazine Network. I'm here at Ellis Hospital in Schenectady, where they're having protests against working conditions and working contracts.
There is another epidemic right now. It's an epidemic of greed. Across the region, that they do not understand the very essence of what they are there for. They are there for the people of the community,
right.
And the people who are healing are the people who are necessary. Not necessarily the people at the top. I'm not saying that, but not necessarily the people at the very top. We need the carers, we need the doctors, we need the health professionals. One thing, my grandmother was a nurse. My grandmother started a nursing home, and she was one of the best carers that we knew. She helped nurse people back from all types of conditions. And so the passion and dedication that is needed is something that cannot be lost in our communities, and it's something that has to be nurtured. I do not want nurses who are caring for others worrying about their mortgages, their rent, or if they have to pick up a second, third, fourth shift in order to make the ends meet. It's not right. Care for your carers. Thank you so much.
And I'm here at the Ellis Hospital New York Nurses Association protest against job conditions and for a contract. And I have one of the groups that here supporting them, the Capital District Area Labor Federation President, Seth Cohen. And how you doing, Seth?
I'm doing well, Willie. Thanks for being here.
All right. So, Seth, tell me what's your thoughts on this rally today and why it's necessary? Because I don't know you did speak.
Yeah, it was an excellent turnout. I don't know how many, probably a couple hundred folks here, not only the nurses, but the labor unions around it. And it really, as one of their lead folks said, they've been at this now for several years, but a year ago they started to sit down at the table. And there's no reason that you can't get a contract in that length of time with the funding that comes into this hospital. These folks deserve to have a fair contract.
Now, is this just affected this hospital, or is there...
It actually does affect all the others. The one that we're talking about today is just the nurses here at Ellis.
Right.
But you've got to figure all of the others. We had somebody here talking from the Albany Medical Center. They are definitely get affected by this. Bellevue gets affected by this. What the Trinity Healthcare is trying to do over in Troy with the closing down the Burdett Center. So they're all connected. They're absolutely all connected, and that's why they're all here supporting each other, as well as, you know, the unions that I represent, we're supporting them as well.
Right. And I want to ask you this, since being president of the Capital District Area Labor Federation, is this going to be a big issue for the for this year, for the 2024 year, is this one of the major issues?
It's definitely one of the major issues, because not only, you know, obviously for the workers, but as someone said, it's about the community.
Right.
You know, these folks are the people when we're sick, when our loved ones are sick, they go to the hospitals. And so if you don't have the nursing staff that you need, you're not going to get the care that you need. If you don't get the care, then your community suffers. And if your community suffers, that's the end of what we all know, that, you know, that kind of keeps us all together. So, yeah, we're 100% behind them. And, you know, we're gonna give everything that we absolutely can to make sure that they get the contracts that they need and the staffing conditions. You know, alongside that, we also work at the legislative end. We talk to the Assembly and the Senate folks about those safe staffing bills and to make sure that they have some teeth to them. You know, it's one thing, you know, sometimes they write a bill and it's like, okay, we got the bill. But if it doesn't mean anything or you can't, like, enforce it, then what's it good? You know, it's not even worth the paper that it's written on.
Okay. And Seth, I do know that y'all have an event coming up. You want to say anything about that event coming
Sure.
up?
Sure. Well, we have two. On the April 27th, we have our annual business meeting with our delegates coming, and there'll be some resolutions about these kinds of things. But sort of related to today, in the afternoon, we have the Workers' Memorial Commemoration. And every year, April 28th, that's a Sunday, so we're doing it on the 27th at the Albany Labor Temple from roughly noon to 2. We commemorate and honor all of the workers that have died on the job in the past year. And I believe this year the number is, it's either 20 or 21. People who've died at their workplaces, or we have, I believe it's 2 suicides as a result of that. Now, these are really a direct result of unsafe working conditions, employers that aren't taking care of their workers. And that's just unacceptable to us.
And that particular event is open to the
yes, and anybody, yeah, from noon to 2, they can come. We'll have some talks from a variety of people. We may have some representatives from those families. We'll honor each of those members each of those people that died. We'll have a little lunch and commemoration, and people can talk and mingle and get some support for each other. And that's absolutely open to the entire public.
All right. Thank you, Seth. That's Seth Cohen, who's president of the Capital District Area Labor Federation. Thank you, Seth.
Thanks, Willie.
And I have as my guest.
My name is Cosmo, the vice president of 81359. This is the Momentive Chemical Workers in Waterford.
Right. Oh, I remember. Right.
Yes.
Y'all had a long struggle.
Yes. Yes.
So, what's your thoughts on here? You know, you out here helping them?
Yeah, we were called out again. We had times where we're also getting ready for on contract. And looking back, historically, the contract we have right now, a few years back in 2017, we had a strike, one of the longest strikes we've had in America for a while. And it was successful because of the help from the same nurses that are here. So we feel and we kind of have that bonding that they helped us during our time. So when they call for us, we have to step up and help them out.
That's what labor is supposed to do.
That's the strength of labor, the strength of numbers.
So what do y'all contract
with? Our contract right now, we are destined to next summer, we'll start our negotiations. Yes.
Have you had any real problems, you know, with management?
As always, man, you're talking with corporate, and you're talking about profits and healthcare, talking about retaining talent and cost of living. So that's some of the things we're looking forward to, because where we are right now, healthcare has only gotten worse. And even in times of, times are tough, but for being a chemical plant, I think we're holding well. The business has not been that bad. So we're hoping that we could have a decent, you know, so our approach at it is to be decent because we all need this job. They need us here and we need us to be, we all need the job. So we're hoping that we can have a decent table negotiations where we could meet and have halfway and they can address our needs on healthcare, they can address our needs on cost of living, and at the same time, see how we can retain our talent in the Gaborone district and be profitable for the company. So that's what we're hoping for. And so if that don't come, we're ready to go.
You ready to call up?
Yes, we're ready to call up the community. All right. Yes.
Thank you now.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That was Willie Terry reporting for the New York State Nurses Association rally, calling for safe staffing and a fair contract at Ellis Hospital in Schenectady.
For those of you just tuning in, I'm Sina Bazila-Hickey.
And I'm Rick Rigney. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOC LP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOG LP 92.7 FM Troy, WOOS LP 98.9 FM Schenectady, WOA LP 106.9 FM Albany, WCAA LP 107.3 FM Albany, and streaming online at mediasanctuary.org. This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. Now it's time for our weekly trivia segment. Our disabilities correspondent Blaze Bryant digs into his archives to bring us some trivia with the comedian James King from early March.
So this is kind of a Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month / Women's History Month themed trivia. So that's what we're going to do here. The first question, this 1972 documentary about this particular place really shed a light on the horrors of institutionalizing people with disabilities. James, was it Meadowbrook, Willowbrook, or Babbling Brook?
Okay. I'm going to go with answer A, because that is the one that sounds the most familiar to me. I'm not confident on this one, so I don't feel good about it, but I will go with choice A, please.
You are wrong, my friend. It was actually Willowbrook.
Willowbrook, darn. I knew it wasn't Babbling Brook. That one I figured out, but... Yeah. But no, I guess I now have a documentary that I need to look into.
Yes, Willowbrook. You can find it. It's on YouTube.
Okay, that's good to know. See, getting questions wrong, but still learning. I think I think there's a metaphor for life in that somewhere.
Right. I mean, we did that in school. That's how we met.
Yeah, we got a lot of things wrong in school.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, this is starting to sound like our dating history. We got a lot of things wrong.
Well, you said it, not me.
It's okay. My exes don't listen to anything I do. I can make these jokes.
Right. Well, I don't know if any of mine do, and at this point, I really don't care because I certainly finally got it right, and you got it right, so
yeah,
who cares?
We're both living the dream now. So.
Question number two. She is the mother of the disability rights movement who died 1 year ago. Is it Judy Heumann, Judy Shimlin, or Judy Hill?
I really feel like I did not learn anything in school hearing these questions. I'm like, why does none of this sound familiar to me?
Well, the reason, I'll tell you why. Because disability history is not taught in schools and it needs to be.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you because I feel like this is something I should know. And I feel like I remember you posting about this, but I don't know the name. I am going to go with choice C. I'm going to go Judy Hill, I believe, was that choice. Am I correct?
Well, you were correct that it was choice C and Julie Hill is the name, but you were actually wrong.
But I was wrong. Okay.
Yes.
And who was it?
It was Judy Heumann.
Judy Heumann. Okay.
Right. And you know who
Judy... I got homework after this.
Right, right. Well, you know who Judy Shimlin is, right?
That one sounds familiar. Is she an actress?
That's Judge Judy.
That's Judge Judy.
Yeah, oh, Judith Shimlin. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I did not meet her, but my college roommate did because she did the commencement for UAlbany in 2012, and he was in the Earth Tones, and he says that she's a lot shorter than she looks on TV. She's a shorter person.
Okay. Well, I never thought to look.
Yeah. Yeah. So you would have just been able to tell just from talking to her, the sound would have been coming from a lower point in the. She's short. That's all I'm trying to say. I gave up on the analogy. It's not working.
I had to do that to you.
How do you keep inviting me back to this? I'm just coming here to answer questions wrong and humble myself.
Because that's why I invite you back.
I swear I was smart 20 minutes ago before we started recording. I swear.
That's at best debatable.
Oh.
All right. The third question here. This Illinois senator became disabled when she was fighting in the Iraq War. Is it Tammy Duckworth, Tammy Jones, or Tammy Wynette?
That is A, Tammy Duckworth.
You got it!
Yes, I knew one. The second you said the name, I was like, I know it's her. I know it's her. I know this. I could not have told you Illinois. You know, that was new information for me. But I knew the name. So it's a question right. We're taking it.
There you go.
As someone we know once said, we're taking the points.
A high school gym class reference. We're taking the points.
Yep. We're taking the points.
That's what you do on the Trivia Tuesday here on the Blaze Nexus podcast. You take the points.
Yeah, you take the points.
I got to work that in more often now.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm glad I could contribute something because it's definitely not my question answering that I'm contributing with.
Yeah, well, you got one right at the end.
Well, I will say in my defense, I usually do a lot of trivia at breweries, so I'm not used to doing my trivia 100% sober. So this is quite the accomplishment for me.
I mean, we texted about this earlier in the week, so you could have if you wanted to. You had time to slam down a couple of beers to more simulate it.
You know, I could have. That's what I should do next time. I should make sure that I've at least had an IPA or something, you know, just a little bit to take the edge off to answer the questions. I mean, also how usually my wife is my trivia partner. So usually she could be like, James, that's a dumb answer and choose something else.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's called teamwork.
Right on. Well, James, as always, it's a pleasure, and you've got some upcoming shows down in the city and on Long Island and up in the North Country. You can go learn about those. And he works really hard in addition to his day job, because let's face it, being funny, especially for him, is really difficult. JamesKingComedy.com. Again, that's JamesKingComedy.com. You're on what? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff at
Facebook, Twitter. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads. I'm everywhere at James King Comedy. I'm going to be tonight. I'm going to be at a show in Huntington, New York. And then this Friday, I'm going to be in New York City at the Producers Club. And then I will be in Plattsburgh coming up in April. And that's on April 13th. We're doing two shows at Old Soul. which is a nice restaurant, or not restaurant, excuse me, a nice bar up there. There's restaurants on that main street. But yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful bar with lots of craft beers. So definitely, you know, fun to come out and have a drink and have a laugh. So.
And you're an old soul, so once those two shows are done, you're just going to go to bed and sleep for 12 hours until you got to get the train to go back to the city. So,
yeah, I know. I'm sleeping 6 hours on that train ride. The part of comedy they don't tell you about is how I got to travel for all these things. It's easy to write jokes and tell them. It's hard to travel and book things.
Right, but do you ever get material just watching people while you're traveling on the train or whatnot?
I do sometimes. I have a joke, honestly, from when I lived in Albany and I overheard someone at the bus stop say the most wild sentence I've ever heard, but it's definitely not a, podcast friendly. So if you want to hear some of those jokes, you might want to come see me live.
All right. Well, let's just stop promoting you before your head gets too big. And James, as always, this is a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm always a fan of all the things that you're doing. And also, if you're listening to me plug myself, also Blaze, he's doing so many different things. And, you know, all of the shows that he does, his baseball podcast, Follow This Podcast, you know, he puts a lot of work into the stuff that he does, and I don't think he always gets the credit for what he does. So definitely, you know, support him as well.
All right. I'm getting t-shirts made, and you'll be one of the first to get one. So I appreciate that, bro. Thanks.
Yes, of course. Of course. I can't just sit here and plug myself the whole time. I got to plug you too, dude.
Right on, brother. Well, thanks a million as always.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
That was Blaze Bryant giving us another week of trivia on the theme of disability. Judy Heumann always enjoys, is worth a good shout out.
Next, Bree Barthel shares autobiographical book recommendations from the Troy Library.
Listeners, if you enjoy hearing about other people's lives from other people, this is the segment for you. I'm here with Laurie Dreyer, who is the manager of the Lansingburg branch of Troy Public Library, and she has picked out some autobiographies that she said are each available as audio autobiographies. She did that just to test to see if I could actually say that clearly. I hope I did. So, Laurie, welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you, Bria. It's really good to be here.
Okay, and looks like you've got an interesting mix, so start us off.
I do. And first, I kind of wanted to talk about biography because it was kind of a maligned genre of nonfiction. And in fact, I brought this up to my employees last week, and we got into a big discussion about the difference between entertainment and informative texts and how that plays into biographies and autobiographies. I have to say, I'm not super concerned with that argument. What I really love is to hear someone's life story directly from them. So autobiographies are my favorite, and the best format that I can consume them in is an audiobook. I love when the author reads it to me. It's like they're sitting in the room telling me about their life. So I wanted to share that with you today and give you a few titles that you can try out yourself and see how you do.
So she does have the printed paper copies in front of me, but as she said, each of these is also available on audio. Okay, so what's your first one?
My first one is My Beloved World by Sonia Sotomayor, the Supreme Court Justice. I don't know if your listeners are familiar enough with Sotomayor to know that a few years ago she visited UAlbany. And I had a chance to see her. And in preparation for that visit, I did listen to her audiobook. And it was so lovely. It was such a wonderful story of her childhood and her experiences at Princeton University and how she was able to keep focus due to the most unlikely thing that would cause focus. And that is her diabetes. She was diagnosed with diabetes as a very young girl, and she had to learn to give herself injections. And it's really not something that we talk about enough, but kids with medical issues seem to often have this in common where they grow up so quickly because they have to. And that helped her to keep her focus on becoming a lawyer, which was really what she wanted to do.
That's interesting. I knew an MIT professor who had polio as a kid, so he was in bed quite a long time, and he just basically read every book in the local library. He was a brilliant man from doing that.
I bet. That's incredible. Yeah, I'm often blown away at people's childhoods. The second book that I wanted to recommend, and I don't have a copy here, is You Can't Touch My Hair by Phoebe Robinson. It's her 2016 book. It's her first book, but it is wonderful. And she's a pretty well-known comedian at this point, although her work still seems to be sort of on the outskirts of comedy land. She's a screenwriter and an actress and a podcaster. And then she's also written at least 3 books. So You Can't Touch My Hair was, I listened to it back in 2018 when the idea of touching someone else's hair without their permission was pretty unheard of for me. I was thinking maybe it's just because I just don't actually like people all that much. But for her and subsequent Black female comedians have since pointed out how often this becomes a question. Still, to this day.
And actually, what's even more appalling is sometimes not a question. I've had friends that have said people just come up and touch their hair without even asking.
I just, that's impossible. I mean, not impossible, unfortunately, but that is just ridiculous. So I felt that Robinson's take on the matter really helped me to understand this issue and that it was something that was still happening. And also her commentary was just so fun and funny. And there were just so many moments in this book when I was just, my side started to hurt because I was laughing so much. So I really enjoyed that particular book. I would recommend any of her titles.
And say the title again.
You Can't Touch My Hair by Phoebe Robinson.
Excellent. Okay. And then you have a couple more.
I do. I want to talk about Somebody's Daughter by Ashley C. Ford. Ford's powerful memoir, and it is a memoir, chronicles her childhood in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where she was raised by her mother while her father was incarcerated. And for years, she spent the majority of her childhood not knowing why her father was incarcerated. So she was growing up with her mother and her brother, and at 13, she was sexually assaulted by a classmate. Later, she learns that her father was incarcerated for the same crime, sexual assault. And so she does an amazing job of exploring her father's crime, her own experience with assault, and how shame, violence against women, and the secrecy surrounding sexual assault prevailed upon her life and how she's trying to change that. Despite the subject matter, I found this book to be really easy to listen to. I think that's an important thing to point out and emphasize to your listeners. It is not a large book. And while it does have heavy themes, it was very digestible. Ashley Ford is a very good writer and, again, is someone who has written a lot online, so got her start there, and she's made this very palatable.
And that title, again, is Somebody's Daughter, a memoir by Ashley C. Ford. I like how the books you've mentioned have very different takes and famous people and not famous people. So what's the next?
Well, I wanted to do some honorable mentions just because I have listened to so many of these. So my first honorable mention is Tina Fey's Bossy Pants, which, again, most of your listeners are going to be familiar with. But the audiobook is incredible. I mean, she adds things into the audiobook that are not in the book, and it was hysterical. Wonderful. Although at this point, she probably needs to make a sequel. I also wanted to recommend Dick Van Dyke's autobiography. He has My Lucky Life, In and Out of Show Business, but he also has a couple of others, the audiobooks he does read, and they're wonderful. I feel the same way about Carol Burnett's books. I mean, it's really just wonderful learning about comedy and Hollywood back in the day, the 50s, 60s, 70s, and what it was like to be a comedian at that point in time. So highly recommend those. I also really loved Michelle Zahner's Crying in H Mart, a completely different take on the autobiography. Michelle Zahner is the lead singer of Japanese Breakfast, is a small indie band. And she writes about her mother. Her mother is very much set in her old world Korean traditions and beliefs, but she's still trying to be a modern mother for Michelle. And so it's Michelle's take on that, and then, of course, her mother's illness and her eventual passing.
And Crying in H Mart probably sounds familiar to people because it was a bestseller for many months on the New York Times list.
It was indeed, yes. And Michelle does such a great job talking about her mother and the diaspora of Korean Americans, but also she brings up so much food that I wanted to eat.
Okay, so those three were Tina Fey's Bossy Pants, Dick Van Dyke, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business, and Michelle Zauner, Zauner's Crying in H Mart. Even if you don't read the Dick Van Dyke book, it's worth looking at the cover because people of a certain age will remember him being very rubber-legged dancing, and the cover shows him standing on tiptoe on one leg and kicking the other leg up above his head level. So that's Dick Van Dyke all over the place.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my first memory of him is from Mary Poppins. He was the chimney sweep, and he kicked all over London.
Okay, so people of a certain age are singing Chim Chimney, Chim Chimney. Speaking of chimneys and buildings, tell us about the latest update on here at Lansingburg branch of the Troy Public Library, which is open partially.
We are. On the 1st of April, we were able to open the building partially. Unfortunately, our children's area is still closed. It is under construction. It has had the demo done, so the plaster's off of the walls and there's no flooring and whatnot. We are hoping that we can get the room rebuilt the next year or so.
Remind us where the Lansingburg branch is.
We are at 27 114th Street on the corner of 4th Avenue and 114th Street in Troy. You may be more familiar with it if I tell you that we are just up the block from Snowman Ice Cream.
Do you get paid to mention them every time?
I think I help keep them in business, that's for sure.
Okay. So again, that was Lori Dreyer, manager of the Lansingburg branch of Troy Public Library. For more information, you can go to the website thetroylibrary.org. Thanks a lot, Lori. Nice seeing you again.
Thank you, Bria. Thanks for having me.
Bria Barthel's book recommendations from the Troy Library are all listed in the description to this segment and the details on our website, mediasanctuary.org.
AAPI Heritage Month is a nationwide celebration that centers the rich history, notable contributions, and diverse experiences of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the United States. The exhibition, Threads, celebrates this month with regional AAPI artists.
This is KP Holler reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. With me today from Albany Center Gallery in downtown Albany are Tony Iadesico, Executive Director of Albany Center Gallery, Justin Coe, owner of Son of Egg and organizer of AAPI Heritage Month 518, and Andrew Kwok, ACG Fellow and co-curator of the Threads exhibition coming up at ACG in celebration of AAPI Heritage Month. Welcome to you all.
Thank you for having us.
So for our listeners who may not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about AAPI Heritage Month 518?
People are unfamiliar with what AAPI is. It's Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and it's a month to recognize and honor the history, culture, contributions, and achievements of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the United States. This was really inspired by our lead organizer, Rachel Hye-yeon Rupright. She saw similar events like seen in Cincinnati and also in Memphis, and thought it would be a great idea to kind of emphasize our local AAPI people. So in the Capital Region, about 6% of the people fit within this group of Asian American and Pacific Islanders. And it's kind of a way that we can celebrate these people, show the diversity in our community and also our contributions to our local communities. And this is a first time event, and hopefully it grows into something more representative of our community. This first year, it's kind of our warm markets, so just our direct contacts, but we hope that in the leading years that other people can get involved, and then we can also help highlight these folks.
So it looks like there are a variety of events happening throughout the month, but I want to start with one that is happening in collaboration with Albany Center Gallery, and that is the Threads exhibition, which is happening from April 30th to June 1st. Can you tell me about this exhibition, maybe who some of the artists are, who is curating this exhibition, and why it was important to include the fine arts as part of the celebration?
Yeah, so Threads is the name of our exhibition, and it's co-curated by myself, Ruby Silvius, and Ed Tixon. So we sent out a call for art, and we received a lot of submissions, and we thought it'd be important to showcase both emerging and established local oppy artists for this exhibition. And we wanted to not only, you know, give credit to, I guess, what would be traditionally defined as Asian art, we also wanted to highlight what AAPI artists create, regardless of whether that fits that definition or not. So in some case, this exhibition can also challenge this very notion of definition itself. And we just wanted to highlight community and to showcase more art and the skills that the local creatives can do.
So in an exhibition that not only is attempting to challenge maybe some of the stereotypes about the types of work or art that Asian American and Pacific Islander may create, but also that you're co-curating, what are the challenges that that presented?
Yeah, so I mean, we kind of opened it up in the call for art. We opened it up to really anything. We didn't have, I guess, a theme for the exhibition. We just said, submit whatever you're making, whatever that may be. And so we kind of, from all the submissions, we've kind of noticed that the styles of the works were, you know, not what I guess we would stereotypically consider as Asian art. And we thought that that was really powerful too. Obviously, we do have works that maybe is more traditional, and we don't want to discredit that at all. That's not the point of this exhibition, but we just want to, I guess, open the minds of our local community members that art is really everything. There's no boundaries, there's no limits. It shouldn't have any definitions.
And I think also adding on to what Andrew said, we have local high school students that are going to be in the show, all the way to international artists that live in this region that are also part in the show. So really, it's showing a wide range, but also many levels to really connect and inspire each artist. And there will be 27 artists' works on display, which is super exciting.
Wow, that's excellent to hear that there was thought put into how being a part of an exhibition like this can help connect people within a community who may not know each other or be familiar. Also, I'm seeing from the AAPI Heritage Month 518 website, there are a variety of other events. And this being a first time AAPI Heritage Month event in the 518, does this connect our region to a larger movement and community around celebrating Asian American Pacific Islander heritage?
Yes, for sure. I think naturally when people think of Asian culture, they kind of think about the local Thai restaurant or like the local restaurants that they go to. And they kind of put this connection to Asian culture with food. But I thought, yes, the food is very important to all our cultures. But I thought just educating the public or just introducing other aspects of our culture aside from food would be so important. And art being one of the most important that they can now maybe correlate Asian cultures and these different countries with their art or like the people within them and kind of just like get a better understanding of what makes that food the food it is and also the culture around it. And I think we have a Muay Thai boxing event going on. We have some food workshops, some some basketball workshops, a gift wrapping workshop, and some other food and drink workshops. A lot of them are free. Some of them are paid, but everyone's welcome to come. And the date and time of these events are all throughout the month of May. And having our closing at the end of May or the start of June, it's pretty flexible. So whatever people have interest in or when they're available, I think there's a good group of events that people can check out to kind of learn about different cultures and these different countries.
So there will be a variety of events that will also showcase some of the different countries and cultures that make up the background of Asian American and Pacific Islanders. Is that part of dismantling stereotypes or ideas that Asian culture is a kind of monolith and that there's, you know, like one Asian culture?
I think it's very natural for people to think in that way, especially if they're never around other Asian people or these types of cultures. And I moved to the United States when I was 4 years old. So I am an American and I identify as an American, and probably the culture around what I've been around it has always been here. But I think it's natural for people to kind of assume that all the Asians that they see are Chinese or whatnot, because our history is heavily like tied to that. But just as like Caucasians have their different cultures of Irish, Scottish, Italian, whatever it is, that applies for every continent, I suppose. And I think just this month is to kind of just show that, hey, yes, we might come from a similar region, but our cultures can be very diverse and very different. And these are the ways that they are different. And these are the ways that we are similar. And I think just presenting this in a very collaborative way with the community kind of will be a positive way to do this. And I think it'll be fun for people.
Yeah. And added on to that, like for us or the gallery, this really started based on a conversation with Justin and I that we had at our gala. So even just showing how like conversations can connect, but spark ideas. But really then from there, what can happen because of that partnership and collaboration. So
yes, always important to share your ideas with others. You never know where they may lead. So in this instance, it has led to the Threads exhibition, which is opening on Tuesday, April 30th, and will run through Saturday, June 1st at the Albany Center Gallery. If people want to find out more information about the Threads exhibition or about other events that are happening during AAPI Heritage Month, where can our listeners find that info?
People can find it at our website, AAPIHeritage518.com. We are open to start collecting for next year. So if people have different ideas or want to get involved, we welcome that. As we said before, hopefully this grows into something that becomes a bigger part of the Capital Region.
Thank you very much. This is KP Holler for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. My guests today have been Justin Koh, Tony Iadesico, and Andrew Kwok, here to speak with me about the Threads exhibition coming up at Albany Center Gallery, as well as Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month 518. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
You can learn more about the Threads exhibition by visiting albanycentergallery.org/threads. And you can learn more about those AAPI events organized by AAPI Heritage Month 518 that are happening in May. That website is aapiheritage518.com. And that is our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Sina Bazila Hickey.
And I'm Rick Rigney. We thank all of our volunteers who've made today's episode possible. This is a team effort. Mark Dunlay, Willie Terry, Blaze Bryant, Bree Barthel, KP Hollier, and thanks to all of our listeners for making all this possible and worthwhile.